All right, everyone, welcome to Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. I'm Russ Belville, and of course, as always, we have Dr. Mitch Earlywine joining us by telephone from Albany, New York. Welcome, doctor.
Good to be on the show.
All right, there's an interesting lineup of topics for us to discuss today because it's kind of good news, bad news, good news, bad news. So let's start with bad news, or what might be bad news. There's this study that says I believe it is Ohio State University, that legal marijuana shops are causing an increase in property crimes. What did you make of this study?
There are a couple of quirks about this that I want people to be aware of when they're confronted with prohibitionists who are going to say this is somehow an argument for keeping cannabis illegal. Legal marijuana shops increase property crimes is in some ways kind of an unfair headline. If you look closely, yes, there are some property crimes in the adjacent communities around where legal marijuana shops show up. They're nothing like the violent increases in crimes associated with, say, liquor stores or things along those lines. And they also tend to be co-varying with lower socioeconomic status situations that I think are not properly controlled for in the way these data were analyzed. So if someone wants to get a legalized cannabis shop in your neighborhood, please don't shut them down with this argument, because truth be told, right around, literally adjacent to the medical cannabis shops and legal cannabis shops, is not the issue. It's just a little bit away, and it's hard to know how to interpret that until we can get a replication on this. We've had previous data suggest that this was not an issue, so I'm concerned that this may be, in a sense, a type 1 error, that the folks ran so many statistics, they may have found this in part by chance.
I was wondering also, would it be a confounding factor that when the states get around to regulating these shops, that you get a bunch of NIMBYs, not in my backyard folks, that prevent them from being located in certain areas, and they end up in more industrial or poorer areas, and maybe just the economic increase in economic activity generally is to blame for that?
Sad but true, and it really isn't a product of cannabis so much as attitudes about cannabis that have contributed to that. I really like the way you're wording that.
Well, let's take a look at the good news now. For a long time, we've been pointing out the relationship between access to cannabis, medical cannabis, and the decrease in the use and problems with opioids. Now, finally, National Institute of Drug Abuse, NIDA, has come around to, at least as Tom Angel reports it, partially copping to that cannabis could help reduce the problem with the opioid epidemic. Is this as good a news as I think it is?
In truth, this may be the best news we can hope from any federal agency, but for them to actually say that marijuana could curb opioid addiction, we now have some pretty compelling evidence that this really is the case, both on the state level, nationally, and from surveys of individuals that Philippe Lucas has published from dispensaries up in Canada. What a surprise. If you're in opiate withdrawal, cannabis really does help. And I feel like that is far and away the most compelling mechanism. But we also see at the state level, medical marijuana states are markedly less likely to show opioid addiction and opioid-related deaths. And I feel like the deaths data really ought to hit home for folks. But if death doesn't matter to you, only cash does. We're also seeing Medicaid spending in the medical cannabis states is also lower, in part because of decrease in purchase of these opiates and a few other psychiatric meds. So please, please, let's take advantage of this. And if you get the chance, check out Paul Armentano's article at the normal.org website on this. And it wouldn't hurt to remind anybody in Congress that this really is the best path outside this opioid addiction problem.
All right, let's get the message out there. Now, back to the bad news side of today's equation. According to a report in medicaldaily.com, it says smoking marijuana while pregnant may triple the odds of premature birth and low birth weight in infants. Any truth to that, Dr. Mitch?
As my friend Rick Grucia from the University, Washington University in St. Louis has been pointing out, there's some serious confounds here. And so, obviously, I don't want you and me ending up on a cross on the cover of People magazine, Russ. And we wouldn't recommend smoking cannabis during pregnancy because, ooh, something terrible might happen. Nevertheless, the idea that it would triple the odds of premature birth or low birth weight is probably a pretty drastic overstatement because we're talking about low socioeconomic status situations and a strange change over the years in people's willingness to admit to having used cannabis during pregnancy. So, again, we're not recommending cannabis as the effective anti-nausea medication it is known as. We're just saying odds are high, premature birth and low birth weight are probably a product of nutrition and health care and prenatal vitamin consumption and things that are often associated with economics rather than something as simple as consumption of a plant.
Well, that dovetails into stories I've reported on in other segments dealing with parenting, where we've reported, for example, in Alabama, where they'll be drug testing mothers and they find THC and then take the infants away. That would lead mothers to want to not go into prenatal care and visit their doctors. And then there you have your, you know, lower birth weight babies because they're not getting the prenatal care because the prohibition scared them away. Is that a possibility?
In fact, it's more than likely, and unfortunately here we see another thing where cannabis is blamed for an outcome that is really the product of cannabis prohibition.
Mm-hmm. All right, now to my home state of Oregon, where the University of Oregon has put out a study that says legalizing cannabis here, Measure 91 in 2014, did little to change student use. My first thought here was, yeah, it's University of Oregon. They are already pretty much using as much as they can. What are your thoughts being a university professor and all?
Well, some of my friends at Oregon State sent me a big email with capital letters, duh, and an exclamation point. So I got to admit that cannabis legislation has relatively little impact in either direction, though, I want to point out, too. So it's rather unfortunate that I do hear some pretty sad tales via email of folks who are in, you know, legal states or medical states and who still have university cops who are really left over from the fascist era and making a big deal out of something that certainly shouldn't be treated as any worse than alcohol consumption.
Yeah, and if you play football for the University of Oregon, you can smoke a blunt in your car and drive 115 miles an hour down the freeway, and they'll let you go with a warning. So I just can't imagine the use would have gone up any. Let's take a look at some bad news, going back to the bad news side of the equation here. A story out of Mike.com. States with medical marijuana see a greater rise in illicit and problem use. And what's going on in these numbers?
Well, so this is a little bit confused because some of the data were gathered prior to any actual changes in legal status. So the argument is, oh, hey, medical marijuana leads to illicit and problem use. In fact, what's probably more likely is states that happen to have a little more illicit or problematic use were more likely to pass medical marijuana laws. So we've kind of got a cart before the horse problem here. And then I do want to emphasize, essentially, neither Washington nor Colorado have had any problems in teen marijuana use post-legalization, and that these data really do need to be interpreted with considerable caution, in part because these weren't randomly assigned. These states weren't suddenly told, hey, you're going to suddenly have medical cannabis laws. They chose to have this in part because they were different, and the fact that they have some problematic other drug use is a correlate of that, not caused by cannabis legalization.
So is it simple to say that, too simple to say that places that smoke a lot of pot legalize it rather than legalizing pot makes people smoke a lot of it?
It perfectly put.
All right. Let's wind things up here with some good news, especially for those of you with some old dumb mice. A new study shows that cannabis can reverse cognitive decline in mice. And of course, we're hoping this translates to humans, but give us your lowdown on this.
Well, so I do want to emphasize that these are what we would call microdoses, and that the THC is reversing cognitive decline, but only in the older mice. The young mice are showing some impairments walking through those poor mazes, as you might imagine. And I feel like we've got enough confirming evidence in animals now. It really is time to go for the human data. So everyone who wants to be randomly assigned to use cannabis for the next 20 years, please email me. No, I do feel like it's pretty obvious that the antioxidant effects of the cannabinoids are now contributing in a way that we can see is going to protect folks from some of the cognitive declines associated with aging. But the microdosing seems to be super important. So as we've said in the past, a little dab will do you.
Well, that's good news considering that Mickey Mouse is 88 years old. So maybe we can, he's in California, Dr. Mitch, is perfectly legal for Mickey, I believe.
You got it.
Well, thanks for joining us again for our cannabis Q&A. And if you've got any questions for Dr. Mitch Earlywine, you can send them in to 420research@gmail.com, and we may use them on a future episode. We can keep your name private if you wish, but we can use them and get other people the information that you're seeking here on our cannabis Q&A. Dr. Mitch, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
My hearty thanks.